Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Crosgard here with Josh Olswich. Hey, Josh.
Mr. Brian. You know, I called my senator today and they asked me to spell my last name.
Wow.
Did you believe that?
I
was shocked. Somebody picked up the phone. I was like, wow, cool.
Well, you know, you don't have to tell these folks your last name over at Matcha, because it is, for the current moment, no KYC, fully decentralized, self-custodial trading with deep liquidity across all DEXs, and you can trade there at ledgerstatus.com/matcha. I hope it stays that way, Josh. I think it will. I think we'll win this battle, at least for now. Go to ledgerstatus.com/matcha. It's the best way to trade on a DEX. I do it all the time on Matcha. They're partners because they're great. Thanks to Matcha for being our friends and partners. Go to ledgerstatus.com/matcha. Seriously, if you've not traded there yet, you're making a mistake. Dude, there's like, they're outlawing proof of stake or something.
Yeah, what is even going on? Yeah, so the big thing in the U.S., if you are a U.S. citizen and you live in a state with senators, give them a call. Tell them, hey, I care about cryptocurrency legislation. I don't want to support the Cinema Amendment. It would destroy a lot of DeFi stuff, a lot of proof of stake stuff. Mainly, here's the real big thing. You know, we can pass or not pass laws. I don't care. But to throw it in a bill that's going to pass as like this last minute thing where they thought nobody would fight, nobody would put up a stink. And we have to speak up and say something. So anyway,
they should have looked at Senator Cynthia Lummis's laser eyes and they would have known they were going to get a fight, because she's going to bat. Also, Wyden, and I can't remember the other senator that's one of the backing senators. There's two amendments to this pay for provision for the infrastructure bill, and these two amendments both aim to clarify the language of the crypto portion of the infrastructure bill. One amendment is good by Senator Lummis and others, and then one amendment is bad for a multitude of reasons, one of which it really only gives a exception to proof of work miners, and secondarily, it doesn't even make logical sense the way it's worded, as Nick Carter, a prominent Bitcoiner, pointed out. He was like, they basically talk about validation as mining, which is a job of nodes, not miners. So he gave like a gold equivalent of, it's like they mixed up the difference between storing gold in the vault and getting gold out of the earth, you know? And like, that would be verbiage in law. So like, it's problematic no matter what, you know, like it's just incorrect. But also potentially quite damaging, depending on how it's interpreted, for proof of stake coins like ETH 2.0 and, you know, all the other layer ones and stuff that are proof of stake. It would de facto create incredible reporting demands that are not only difficult, but pretty much impossible for many of the components of the chain activity with those. So it would, if passed with the alternative amendment that came late, or as originally stated, it would be quite damaging for crypto in the U.S. So,
well said. Yes. And this isn't, people are like, oh, this is a win for Bitcoin. No, no, no. They're not going to stop a proof of stake. They're going to come for you, your mother, your sister's brother. They're going to come for everybody.
Yeah.
In crypto. So we need to, you know, this is like,
it's a team effort,
yeah,
on this one.
Everybody's on. Everybody needs to get behind this.
What's especially, especially frustrating too, is it's like many of the same people are like, oh, you know, crypto mining is bad for the environment, and then they're like, proof of work only, you know, in the amendment. It's like they don't even know what they put in there. That's what it's like. It's just Veep is the truest political TV show that there is, and I fully believe these are amendments of either incompetence or like incompetent evil from like Treasury or something spilling into the Senate. But on the Senate side, I'd take it as largely like some degree of incompetence.
But anyway. Well, Yellen's behind the
some of
the
it.
Text thing. There's a whole reason. Like, there's no coincidences here. Like,
but it doesn't change the fact that the language is dumb. You know, like, her understanding is far from perfect as well. At least of the consequences of what she says. So anyway, it's all bad, but that's okay.
It's all bad. Stay hungry, stay safe, stay off Binance. That's all I gotta say. If you have anything on Binance US or Binance.com, just get it off. Yeah. Crypto's frictionless for a reason. So Binance, the walls are closing continuously on Binance. Go ahead.
Let's express what's happening on Binance. We're not trying to just spread FUD. But what is his name? The CEO.
Because we're on regulatory stuff, I figured I'd bring it up.
Yeah, that's fine. There was Brian Brooks of Binance US, who has not been the CEO of Binance for US for that long, has resigned from Binance US. And he said, despite differences over strategic direction, I wish my former colleagues success. So there were differences over strategic direction, which must be from a regulatory perspective, you would think, like how to approach regulatory issues. So, I mean, he literally just replaced Catherine Coley, like, what, 2 months ago? I mean, not long ago.
And it's still not publicly reported why she left, how she left, yeah, when she left. Like, we have no idea. She's not said anything, I don't think, on Twitter in months.
And I'll state, actually, I actually like Binance from a trading perspective. Like, for a centralized exchange, I've had no issues trading on Binance US, but it's just not worth it to be there when you have other options. You know, if you need centralized exposure and you're an American, you can do it on Kraken, you can do it on Coinbase, you can do it on Gemini, you can do FTX. It on FTX US, of course.
Still.
So there's four, like, I would say, tier one US exchanges from a security perspective. Liquidity might be a little different on different ones, but from a security and, like, quality perspective, all are pretty good. And then from a decentralized perspective, which is how we all prefer to trade, of course, you can just have self-custody and use Matcha. So, still plenty of options. There's no real need when there's this level of uncertainty with exchanges to use Binance US. Although you'll probably have warning if you're needing to get off of there. But I doubt that it'll ever be the case. It's just caution. That's all it is. Because what does happen, like Binance.com, that reduction of 2 BTC down to 0.06 BTC withdrawals per day was a huge deal for anybody with size. Like, it could take you like a year to get out, you know, if you were an American or non-KYC user on Binance.com, then you had that one was basically waiting on you, you know.
Well, they cut off Hong Kong overnight, and they said they framed it as a positive, which is a joke. They reduced withdrawal limits overnight from, what was it, 2 BTC to 0.06 or something, right? Non-KYC accounts. They're not going to hack. Your money's not going to get hacked. It's not going to be stolen. It's not going to be blah, 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 but just get it off, right? It's just, there's no reason to have it on there anymore. Sorry. Until this stuff gets cleared up. And they're just closing the walls everywhere across the world. Singapore, Hong Kong, Malaysia, you know, just because those, Netherlands, Denmark, UK, list goes on and on and on. So anyway,
what is that saying? First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight, or something like that.
Then you lose. No.
We seem to be entering the fight stage.
They, you know, nobody could have done what Binance did as far as just like exploding all over the world. But now, like, the chickens are coming home to roost and the regulators are coming after them. You know, it's just that simple. You can't be like funding Hamas and be in a conversation with the rest of the civilization. That's just not how it works.
Josh throwing out this funding Hamas business right there.
Well, look at all the UTXOs. Look at all the paths for moving coins around. It's all ransomware stuff going through Binance, Hamas going through Binance. Like, this is the reason why they're going after Binance. This isn't just like...
I haven't looked at that. That's scary.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Bitcoin. Bitcoin is at, what price is this? $42,950. Almost $43,000. Almost the almost to the zone, Josh. The 44444 sell it all number. Will I sell it all at 44444? No. Like, am I going to follow my plan? No, I'll just regret that I didn't. But it is officially in the yellow box. What do you say about that, sir?
So I like the cloud more than anything as far as directionality and targets are concerned.
But my target is the 200-day moving average. So I asked what you think, and I'm really saying what I think.
And I think it goes higher. I think it goes to 47.
Which is why I need to ignore the 44. Although, I hope that the 200-day is temporary resistance. It pushes through, and then it ping-pongs between that 47 and using the 200 as support instead. Bitcoin overall is moving a little slower than some other assets. And those assets basically did that, right? They kind of blew through their longer-term moving averages, and then they are using them as support on the flip side. So I hope that this follows a similar strategy. As an example,
I think for the most part, unless you are just like permabull the entire way down, it's hard to switch your bias for like this 40% move from the bottom.
Switch your bias
like
to
super.
Bearish.
No. To switch it from like things are looking like death, devastation, and doom to okay, we're going up 40% now, and then we get this like we get a pullback, but it's not like big pullback. You know, I was in since 34, so it's whatever on personal stuff, but on like the enzyme stuff, the reason I didn't add more is because I thought we'd get more of a pullback to like 35, 36. It didn't happen. 37.3 is I think the lowest I got, but anyway. Everything looks good for up. DeFi looks great. Solana, like all this other trash chains, they look fine. Everything looks the same, which is a bit troubling. Like if we look at all of the altcoins, they're all painting the same type of chart, which is fine. But I guess be smart about it when you're rotating around, which we talked about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Sorry,
chat is just going off. They're killing the vibe, man.
No, I'm just banning some guy from the chat who always shows up under a different name.
we talked about this pre-stream, but people are so angry. Like, if you don't like what we put out, just ignore us. Like, what do you have to come in here and talk crap? I don't know. It's weird. But yeah, charts look good. DeFi looks good. We can go over targets and everything, but. Everything is the same rationale as far as the cloud stuff's concerned, at least in my vision, Ichimoku's vision. And ETH is on the verge of a daily Kumo breakout, which is insane. It's only had one red candle in what is this, 14 days, 16 days? 16 days. It's insane. And this is the EIP-1559, 100%. I think.
Yes.
Which is fine. I don't know. It's awkward because there wasn't a clean edge-to-edge entry here. There was a clean chart pattern as far as like, you know, it's above 2300, then it should reach the target. You know, for people who hate technical analysis, there you go.
Well, you know,
so the target makes sense. It's just how it got there. It's so violent. Go ahead.
In 2 days of VIP 1559, actually it's more like 1.5 days, almost 6,400 ETH has burned. In the first day, it was like 4,600 or so. And basically that equates to 35 to 40% of the daily emissions of Ethereum. So that's a significant reduction of total emissions without the proof of stake component being in play. And when that happens, the emissions go down a lot anyway. So at this rate of burning, like Ethereum's emission schedule is being drastically changed. Ultrasound.money has a graph of this. You can watch the cumulative. It's fun. And you can, you know, change various things about it. But there is a pretty good chance that depending on when proof of work removal occurs, which I think like saying that's in January 2022, which is what this estimates, is like very optimistic. Once that happens, like if this type of fee burn rate continues, like Ethereum could be very, very disinflationary, potentially have times of zero inflation or deflation. Of course, it's static. It's not all, or it's dynamic. It's not static curves like Bitcoin. But just since it's been live, just OpenSea activity has resulted in 770 ETH burned, and then Uniswap 500 and Axie Infinity, and you know, you see the most popular apps being those that are burning ETH. I think this will normalize a little bit as well, just because right now a lot of the apps that will support 1559 style transactions, they just essentially are paying too much gas and then breaking it up into the base fee plus miner tip themselves. But in the future, they'll have that more specifically laid out. I wanted to share the little meme that I made. I didn't originally make this curve. Somebody else did that, but I applied it to the Beta and Chad meme. And while this is obviously a joke, it does mean to insinuate, like, you know, BTC's curve is great. It is known. It is scheduled. It is there in advance what will happen, what the emission will look like. Whereas Ethereum's, because it's so dynamic, it depends on activity. It depends on all kinds of things. So the monetary policy of Ethereum, while at times may be more deflationary, it's certainly more unknown. So anyway, so far, a successful rollout of EIP 1559, which wasn't a certainty. So pretty cool.
Well, what's defined success? Is success people onboarding and then being with it?
Like, no, just that, like, the code, it's not like the code broke.
Right. The code came out. Wallets may or may not support it. I don't think MetaMask is supporting it still. Like you mentioned, people are still overpaying. That's an issue. I mean, this is all just part of, this is mainly like decentralization stuff rather than like specifically EIP 1559, but these are considerations that need to be made when you're implementing this kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. Price Discovery in the chat. First of all, great username. Asked a good question. Is it possible to draw any conclusions on the outlook for gas fees before layer twos come along? Layer twos are along now, like optimistic rollups through Optimism are out now. It's just that liquidity is not there yet. As apps start to push towards layer two as primary landscapes for activity, then it'll have a massive improvement on the usage. But I would expect there to be kind of a permanent busyness on ETH layer one, no matter what. But because of layer two availability, you won't have to use layer one all the time. So it can still be cheap for you on layer two as more and more apps support it. Like, there will hopefully be ways to like buy NFTs on layer two, you know, like as a primary place to do so, because it's kind of absurd. Like, you might buy an NFT for like 0.01 ETH and pay 0.03 ETH to buy it, you know. So there's a lot of stuff there that could be problematic. What are you showing here with gas, Josh?
I was just looking at what the fees were.
Oh yeah,
they're quite high. The problem is you can't even like game this out, because you just have to see what's happening. You know, there's just so many variables now with layer one, layer two, EIP not supporting it, and 1559 NFT stuff launches like coming out of nowhere. All of a sudden, gas goes to infinity. Like, you can't like predict when that's going to happen. All I can say is, based on this chart, is avoid noon. I think this is EST, right? Whatever this time frame is, very clearly in the day, like, this is the hot spot lately.
Is that UST? UTC? Yeah, it's automatically adjusted to your time zone. So it's Eastern time zone lunch. So the Eastern time zone lunch hour is a very busy time for gas, apparently.
Yeah, I wish they had a time of day like average for this, but yeah, avoid noon EST 100% for any transactions.
It's random.
Just do something around those times. I mean, I did a bunch of transactions before EIP 1559 hit, because I knew things were just going to be like, who knows, right? So I just like did a bunch of stuff to get it over with, because I didn't want to deal with whatever's going on now. Because I don't know if the DEXs are supporting it. And from a gas perspective, I don't know if Enzyme is supporting it. That's the trading site I use. You know, I don't know what I don't know. And I'd have to look at every single one of those things. So I was just like, okay, I'll just buy some ETH, buy some BTC, and be done with it.
Yeah. I think before too long, and I say that as in, like, I don't know, let's say early 2022, you will be able to have an almost entirely layer two existence where the only thing you really have to do on layer one is every now and then transfer money for 15 or 20 bucks from layer one to layer two or layer two to layer one, but then do almost all your activity on layer two directly. And I think that'll make Ethereum affordable for everyone.
I don't know. All I know is there's pump metals. Again, if I'm on my deserted island, like safe and sound, you know, whittling coconuts or whatever, like, I just ignore all this stuff, the EIP, whatever, and just look at the chart, because the chart was right. You know, it was right here. Here's your W, here's your inverted head and shoulders, whatever you want to call it. We had cloud stuff. We had all sorts of reasons why this stopped dying. And, you know, if you got scared out of this based on the infrastructure bill in the United States, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know.
Douchey P says, surely Matic stands to benefit massively until layer two issue is resolved. Layer two doesn't really have an issue. Like, they're already rolling out. So in my mind, Matic's use case is okay for some stuff that's not a high security ish thing, like maybe a game, but you need full EVM compatibility, Matic could work well. But if it's like stuff that needs ETH layer one security mechanisms in place, then Matic's not as good because it has its own security stuff built in. It just has compatibility with ETH virtual machine, which is the, you know, compute backbone of Ethereum. So like Matic and BSC are very similar as an example. Even though BSC would call itself a fork, it's really just a sidechain of ETH because it's an ETH fork. Matic is similar. Whereas the layer twos, like on Optimism, Optimistic rollups and ZK rollups are derivative of ETH in that they adopt ETH security model. So you have the security of ETH while you're on layer two. So that's the important thing there. So I'm not personally super bullish on Matic, but it's not necessarily to say I'm bearish on Matic either. I don't think it's like standing there to be, the hero of like scalability while layer two figures itself out. I think layer two is actively figuring itself out. Another element, until you look at Coinbase, Josh, is ETH, the weekly chart is like, it looks like continue the party territory, you know, like dipped under the 20 week, went back above the 20 week. That is my long-term favorite trade signal. Like if we go to BTC, for example, historically when that has happened, it's meant good things for the future. It did that. So what this would tell me is you could buy 2,500 as a good risk reward. And that it doesn't look like a bearish setup for Ethereum, even from here. Which is kind of stunning to say. When you look at it on linear, it looks a little grosser to me. But I don't know. It flipped the 20 week. That's like my big thing, right? And if you're going to have a system, use your system. My system tells me I don't need to be short, although this proof of stake stuff is a little concerning. And legislature on our deserted islands with just the chart, it looks pretty darn good. 2880 is a key horizontal level, so it's at resistance of sorts now intraday. Wouldn't be surprised if it closed right at 2880 on the day. But if it passes it, the next kind of logical level to me is closer to like 3700. So that's how I'm looking at ETH. Pretty stunning after, you know, what did you say, one down day out of 15?
Yeah, I think you make your money and all this stuff. Don't become a community member. Hold Matic long term, you know, whatever you want, and put it away, right? If you think Matic, I'm not just picking on Matic, I'm just saying in general, it's much easier to just separate, in, at least for me. Like, okay, I think Bitcoin's a thing, let me just buy some and hold it. I think Litecoin, whatever it is a thing, I'm gonna buy some and hold it, I'm gonna trade the rest, right? Even Coinbase is bullish, just that was my point. Coinbase, MSTR, these incredibly crypto centric kind of charts looking very bullish as well. So I can't really find a bearish chart, honestly. Even Curve was moving up. Curve looked fine on the USD pairs.
Zero, Curve looks great. I have Curve. I want to respond to 0x Remington in the chart. Basically, I don't throw in shade at moving averages. You can throw shade all you want, dude. I know it's an average of price, but it doesn't literally mean nothing. What it literally means is it's the average of the price, and therefore, whether it's cheap or expensive relative to the history of the price due to that average. Historically, the 20-week and 200-week have been very important price areas for Bitcoin and also Ethereum, and the 200-day in particular is like the status quo thing to look at for many, many markets. So I choose to use them. You don't have to use them, bro. I don't care. It's trend following. If you're going to use a trend following strategy, this is the way that you can do it. Josh often shows us how to do similar with the cloud. Do you have to do it? No, but that's what it does. It doesn't mean nothing. It can mean nothing to you. It means something to me. It's my podcast. I'm talking about it.
Yeah. And BTC, most importantly, we held the top side of this pitchfork so far. So ideally, you know, this is six-figure territory by the end of the year. You know, it looked like we were dying. Looked like we were dying. We didn't die. Now we're going to just cruise up here. We're going to cruise up here, whatever this is.
What do you think about just some kind of gigantic ascending triangle or something? Like, what if Bitcoin does what ETH did in 2017? where it's like, remember, ETH couldn't push past 400, right? But it just kept making higher lows, made this great ascending triangle, and then blew the lid off, you know, 3x itself after that.
An ascending triangle here?
Yeah.
On BTC?
Yeah, I can doodle one for you.
I mean, I'm mainly focused on, like, okay, have we actually canceled this head and shoulders yet? Right? Like, how wrecked are the people who are shorting this wedge or out, you know?
You have to admit, like, from a price perspective, like, if you were playing that breakdown and you still are, and you're like, oh, it might be head and shoulders, it'd be very nerve-wracking.
I mean, I was incredibly bearish, but I was still, this was 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. You can go back and listen to it. But I was incredibly bearish on that. And I was still in because I was like on a hope and a prayer. Maybe this thing does something, right? But it did not look good. Sub 30, which it got to what, 29 something? It looked like it wanted to go to zero, honestly. It just
did. So the point about basically consolidation through the end of the year would look something like this, right? Where we have a hard time making a new high, or, you know, maybe it ends up even more wedgy looking. Obviously, we're predicting based on only framing the high and the low. That's really all we're doing. But we're clearly in the middle now. That's how it works, right? High, low, middle. So if we range to the high again, like, I don't necessarily think we just blast right through right away and go to 100 something at the end of the year. I actually think this might take some time. So I was curious if you think there's something to that for like a through, like the highs in for the year or close to the highs in for the year, but we have like a 6 month, actually it would be since February, a 10 month consolidation. I think that would actually be really bullish. What do you think?
I don't hate it, but ultimately, you know, if we get a another golden cross on the daily, go ahead and backtest it, TA haters. Is it noisy sometimes? Yeah. Does it have a history of being noisy in 2019? Yeah. But if this thing flips bullish again, I mean, I don't care how, if it goes up 10%, 20%, 600%. That's just a mega long signal for sure, historically. On BTC, on ETH, look at the 1050. That's another one you can look at, which has crossed bullish as of late July, end of July. Again, backtest it again. Like, you know, if you're like, TA doesn't work, okay, fine, don't use it or backtest it and change your mind. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
I feel like people are hot and bothered today, Josh.
My background is science. All I care about is evidence and a process and blah blah blah. Okay.
Yeah.
And I hated TA when I first started, but at some point you have to say to yourself, all right, I don't know why this stuff works, but it does. Okay. And when it starts making you money and paying for things, you just say, all right, you go with the flow, you know?
Well, and like you said, part of science is process, and process can include trying to establish statistical probabilities or, you know, other strategies like mean reversion. That's perfectly right. Okay. Things revert to the mean. That's what happens.
Not saying we're not, but you already said this, but both of us aren't saying you must use this to make money. Like, I could care less what anybody does.
People make money with all kinds of different strategies.
I'm just talking about what I'm doing. That's all I've ever done.
A couple of momentum traders, Josh.
Leave me alone.
A couple of followers.
Yeah. And the 2-year MA, this is a super awkward spot for everything as well, because it didn't give you a buy signal. Didn't get down to the 20K lows.
And it didn't get all the way to the sell signal either this time.
Yeah, it's just all over the place. But yeah, maybe 104 plus. I don't know.
That 2-year MA is one of the better signs of how, like, the Bitcoin market just felt a little more muted this time. You know, like, it didn't. It got hot for a bit, like, you know, rode just under that top line, but it didn't just like blow the lid off like it has before.
Yeah. And for ETH, like, for me, the most important thing is this NFT stuff. I don't want to talk about it at all, but just like the ICOs, it's a part of the picture here, right? Like, if there's ICOs, if there's DeFi, if there's reasons to buy ETH and use it, of course it's going to go up, right? Like, I think this NFT stuff is the most bubbly anything's ever been, honestly. I've never seen, because with alts, like, you can buy a fraction of something, right? But with this NFT stuff, don't you have to buy like the entire thing?
This is like, there are ways they're creating in order to not have to do that, but
to fractionalize it. But yeah. Like, who are these people that have this much ETH just throwing it at useless trash? Like,
trash
just boggles my mind.
And
it is legitimately no utility other than saying I bought this. That is it. That is where the utility ends.
Hold on. There's lots of stuff people do for that, right?
That's fine. And I don't understand any of that other stuff either. But I'm just saying, from my perspective, okay, that's where the utility ends. I think it's bullish for anything that actually has utility in the future.
Gino says you're 5 IQ. That's not correct. Josh is perfectly 100 plus IQ, and it's hard. This is hard to justify as a reasonable IQ person. If you're very low IQ, it's perfectly reasonable. It's like, Punk Look Good by Punk. That's what people are doing.
And I said this in the pre-show, if you're buying these and flipping them and making money, great. I'm happy for you, right? Like, just like Pokemon cards, right? If you're doing whatever with Flesh and Blood or, well, all these other like copycat NFT IRL things, great, Josh, good for you.
There are 10,000 punks. The floor price of a punk is $152,000 or 52 Ethereum. That is up over 100% in like a week and a half. So
I said this the other day in a different chat, but I said, I think the crazier thing is that 50 ETH is worth $150,000.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to disagree. It's kind of nuts, but it is what it is. As we talked about with all that ETH burning and the utility of the Ethereum network that we see, is ETH doing its job and it's starting to be valued for it. But it is crazy to me. I don't think punks will maintain this ETH value. They may maintain this dollar value. I don't think punks will maintain this ETH value, though. But punks are the blue chips. There's also like tons of other NFT projects that don't have the allure or the culture or whatever else you want to call it that punks have. That said, I know many people flipping punks right now, and they are all like flipping punks short term. And to be honest, it's pretty easy for the floor to keep rising when it only takes like 10 purchases for it to go up another 5% or whatever, because there's only 10,000, you know, one at a time, or someone comes in and buys half a dozen or something like that, and then they list them 20% higher. It's like a swing trade, and that can go both ways. So if you think this is an up-only market, I beg to differ, and I would be a little bit cautious personally. But, you know, they're having fun. Let them have fun.
Teach his own, yeah. Good for whoever you are out there, five people who are flipping and punks.
The whole market has kind of done that. I actually bought a hash mask the other day because they came out saying that they're doing more stuff as well. So that was a speculative buy. I'm using NFT profits to speculate on more NFTs, which is a very similar concept to what happens in altcoin land. So it'll have a very similar result where most of it goes down 95% or more. But I don't know that punks will. I think punks are the BTC of art NFTs, but yeah, it's an interesting time. I know my friends that have been speculating on these, like since they were 15, 20 ETH floors, they're now like, yeah, I don't know. I don't think I can really speculate on floor punks for 50 plus ETH, you know? It just gets a little dicey at that point.
Well, yeah, you price more and more people out for sure.
Yeah, it's like, how many can you actually speculate on? Like, not a whole lot of people have like a spare 50 plus ETH that they're willing to throw on a JPEG and hope they sell it for 60, you know?
And how many, right, you buy it for 50, how many more people in after you are going to buy for 51 plus, right?
Yeah,
like, right. The number gets smaller and smaller.
and the punks in circulation are like the same ones just rising up. Like, there's a lot of punks that just never get listed for sale or whatever, you know? So, anyway, it's interesting. I'm happy for him. All that kicked off, by the way, from like someone came in. There was a lot of speculation that it was Three Arrows Capital. There was speculation that it was some other folks involved as well. My guess was that it was A16Z as one of the potential buyers coming in, swooping up like 80 or 100 floor punks, and that just like kicked off the move as a whole. Now they are like more than 100% in profit already if they're able to just dump on everybody, which of course they can't do. They'd have to list 100 punks at the floor price, and that would terrify everyone if the punks that started the move suddenly were like available for sale, you know. So they caused a pump, but like for them to actually get rid of theirs, they'd have to wait quite a long time. Anyway,
the parts that I like are like the NFT parts, the provenance, the authenticity, the resaleability, the frictionless nature of everything. It's a huge win for OpenSea. You know, those things are great, but the punk stuff, I don't understand. Dude. And maybe because it doesn't have utility, which is why it's like no one knows how to price it per se.
Yeah.
Nope. Whereas something,
I don't think anybody's crushing it like OpenSea. Like OpenSea is making so much money on fees. It's insane.
Yeah. Anyway, that's NFTs.
That's NFTs. Oh, I do have a conspiracy theory. I talked about it on Weekly Open, but I still believe it. I think the people that swept punks and kicked off this like hype wave of NFTs wanted fees to be high from NFT speculation so that it would also have a positive result for the 1559 burning kickoff. So that more ETH would get burned and be bullish for ETH. I think it was a gigantic psyops by a few players, and I would love for that to be true. I just think that's such a genius play that I would love that to be the case. So
that's, yeah, I mean, it's like two or three entities. It's kind of cornering the market. That's what it looks like to me anyway.
Right, but I think the NFT sweep and boom was orchestrated to go alongside the 1559 launch to burn a lot of ETH, get fees up, and creating a rip-roaring NFT boom is a fantastic way to create that fee structure to make ETH 1559 burn a lot of ETH look very bullish.
It's a really interesting coincidence for sure.
Coincidence.
hey, it worked out. Whatever, you know, like, if you're like me and you hate NFTs, just speculate on ETH, right? Like, who cares? You know, I don't need to pay attention to the garbage I'm seeing on Twitter about penguins or whatever else is going on. Rocks.
It's just like altcoins. It gets more and more derivative down the scale of dog poop as you go along. So Mink in the chat has a good point. It says it's also a good top signal. Watch when they start selling. I don't even think you necessarily have to watch for when they start selling. Just when basically you see the rocks start selling, or you know, like the really dumb stuff. DM in the chat said that's a great idea, dog poop NFTs. Yeah, that's the type of thing that are top signals.
I think it's a great proof of concept for future actual important stuff, because like this clearly any Yahoo in their peanut brain can do it, right? So
oh yeah, I mean yesterday, gosh, I need to find the tweet. Like I was just stunned, like looking at this this tweet, and I don't mean anything bad towards him or anything, but it was like their certainty of the punk landscape was just incredible. You know, it was like, just they said something about relative to ETH, their thoughts on punks, and I'll look for it. But it was like, it was so top things, you know. Just, I would be so nervous if I was like heavily exposed, you know, trying to flip punks or whatever.
Yeah, take it off the table. Save yourself from yourself.
Yeah, I think if you're still playing with NFTs, you need to be doing so like with profit at this point, not with like significant stuff at stake.
I agree.
You want to talk about DeFi?
Yeah, I was just going to say on the DeFi perp, which is like the overview of DeFi, at least for me, we had a series of patterns that broke out and didn't break out, and it was just a giant mess. But eventually this clarity came across everything with this double bottom, which is why all these charts look very much identical. ETH moved first, which was always a good sign when you see like a high cap or a higher cap with the same chart as everything else that moves before it. So this gave me bullish confidence to just stay in DeFi. I think it looks good for at least 10K on this index.
I will say, you can always rotate. This is the one that's most at risk from this legislation, though, right?
Probably, you know. But what are you going to do?
This is not going to settle itself until 2023, even if it's passed. So,
I mean, we were talking about this. I heard about this legislation stuff in Europe like a month or two ago, and we talked about it weeks ago. But it's like, at what point do you just stay out because you're scared, or do you just say, "Eh, well, if it happens, it's going to change things"? You know, like, what do you do, right? Like, in the face of this, what do you do? You know, so my decision was, yeah, we're just going to trade DeFi like nothing's going on until something happens.
I think that's basically how you have to treat it, even though I got scared last night and did some rotations. All right, I want to read this tweet before. This isn't to hate on Metastash. I was just like, wow. So they said, right now, 250 ETH might sound insane, but in years to come, would you really rather have 250 more ETH or whoever that is, or a punk, or even a Bored Ape? It's possible those who truly hodl now will hold pieces more valuable as cultural icons than any reasonable amount of ETH. I'm sorry.
I mean, you need people like this because it's all a confidence game. And if people start selling, more and more start selling, and then it all crumbles. But if people start holding, I mean, this is everything that's ever happened ever for crypto since the beginning of time.
In the chat says, I'll take the ETH, thanks. And I'm just saying, with the same boat, especially if you're bullish ETH, like 250 ETH. How many dollars is that, Josh? Like, it's a lot.
So 300K?
How much is it?
I did see.
Right now, 2,800. I did $700,000.
This article where Picassos and Warhols were selling for less than punks. Somebody was talking about it in the chat. Oof.
Yeah. So, and do you want a Picasso or a punk?
Is that a top signal?
That's our show title right there. I'll take the Picasso over the punk.
That's just crazy. Like, when you zoom out and think about it, like, Gary V bought that punk for $3.7 million.
And think about this, Josh. With a Picasso, you can like hold it in your hands in a frame and look at it. You can hang it in your house. It's not like a pixel.
Yeah, I don't. The whole thing just is crazy to me. Man. Yeah, DeFi looks good. Like any chart, I talked about sushi a long time ago, maybe a month or more. I said 14 looked good based on the cloud. Oh, wrong chart, my bad. I like how we're like, get off Binance, but all I'm doing is charting Binance.
Well, it's still got the most liquid fund charts.
Yeah. Yeah, so 14 sushi was the target based on the cloud. It still looks fine. You know, virtually every chart looks identical. You can apply the same principles.
You know, one of my reasons for buying sushi this morning was not only because it was lagging and I was in dollars and wanted to buy something lagging rather than FOMOing back in what I was already in. But the other reason was that I feel like sushi is the most, don't know, for lack of a better term, like DGAF type of DeFi, right? Like, it's not like a company behind it. So I felt like if America banned them, they'll be like, whatever, we got the rest of the world. You know what I mean? So it's like DeFi exposure that's not really, it doesn't really care about America. Whereas the US-based DeFi stuff makes me a little more nervous. And I was like heavily comp exposed, so I was worried about my comp exposure, basically.
No, they all look good. Comp, Uni, Band, Aave. I still have comp. What is that at today? Comp kind of doing a bunch of nothing, but it is up.
Oh, it was up a ton off where we bought it. It was, we bought it like 400 and below. So
yeah, yeah. I mean, my entry's fine, but yeah, as far as I where mean, I expect it to
I
go,
say, I say a ton. Fine. To me, 20% is a nice move on a DeFi blue chip. I know some people want multiples, but Curve also looks like it's really breaking out from its consolidation. Retested the 20-day really nicely. Looks like it's going to go slap the 200-day to me, which is in the 230-240 landscape. Curve also has a large emissions cut coming this month, so that was a part of my thesis as well. I probably would have sold my Curve, but I was too lazy to unstake it and like actually get rid of it. And I'm also using Convex, so it's less liquidity than if you're buying or selling Curve outright, because you're trying to sell Convex Curve. So I got lucky on that one. So that's like the only thing I held, and it's up 10% today. So it's just my day, Josh. Every now and then you just need to get lucky instead of be good. Sushi, the other thing I was going to compare to what your chart showed was cleared the daily closing levels that were at about 890. And then also staring at these 200-day moving averages. This is no different than what we talked about with BTC, right? BTC, 44.4. Sushi, 1240. Same thing. Just give me some 200-day taps. I don't ask for that much, do I?
Yeah. I mean, if all the charts looked like this, then you should have the same expectations, you know, yeah, regardless of if you're part of that community or involved in whatever. If the chart doesn't look like this, I would say, what are you doing? Because there's just so many easy trades right now, I think, on all of these, yeah, anything. Even is Litecoin even look like this?
Hopefully Litecoin doesn't. That would make me more bearish.
Yeah, it does. It does. It does.
Sad. So comp was actually a little trickier because it was under the 200. I was wanting a 200 tap, but it was really close to the 200. So I really wanted a flip and support because this one has more of a pattern trade that if it clears 500, it looks like it's going to 700. And that may still be true. I can have my exposure through those other protocols for now where I feel like there might be a little more hardened to U.S. legislation. But if a favorable amendment is pulled into this legislation, like, I think comp will absolutely fly. But I don't know, from what I was reading on Twitter, it didn't seem like the amendment that passes or the amendment that gets adopted is going to be as favorable for DeFi. So I just figured I'd stay out of it for now. So when it hits the 200 day, then what do we walk away? That's what BTF asks, in the chat. You don't have to walk away, but you could risk off. You could go back to ETH or US or BTC. You know, just alternate your exposure. That, of course, depends on various things like your tax situation, whether you're willing to sell for short-term capital gains, yada, yada. As I've mentioned many times on the show, I'm approaching this year as if it's nothing but short-term capital gains for the calendar year. So I'm willing to trade in and out whenever because I don't plan to hold anything until the end of the year because I'm going to have to give away a large percentage of my portfolio for taxes at the end of the calendar year.
Yeah, I'm excited for NFT prices into tax season next year. That'll be fun.
Yeah. What are they going to do? Like, they made their money in ETH, and then they put it in punks, and now they have no liquidity on their punks. That's oof. And then they owe taxes on the money they made, but they bought punks at the top, and their punks are illiquid. They can't sell them, but they owe taxes on the ETH. Josh, they just gave me a heart attack.
I mean, that's if you want to become a buyer of anything, that's when you become a buyer when everybody has to sell, right?
Yeah.
Even Solana looks incredible to me on the 12-hour and the daily cloud.
Josh, can we make a prediction that the next great punk buying opportunity is next April 2022? Somebody do the reminder and tell me and Josh to look for the punk's bottom in April 2022.
I think that's a great reminder. I mean, if there's anything that's ripe for that sort of thing, I think it's
got to be that, right?
It's that market. Yeah.
People just slamming the floor because they have to pay taxes. Oof. Sorry, what did I interrupt you for? Sol?
Solana. Solana looks good. Again, like, I don't love the chain, but, you know, I can't ignore the chart when it looks like this. Why would you? EOS looks like this. Ripple probably looks like this as well. Like, it's just everything's taking a little bit of a breather and moving up.
Oh, here's another good question. Steber said, when you say it looks good, are you implying it looks good to continue moving or looks good as in the move already happened? I wouldn't say it looks good as in the move already happened. I would say it either looks good for entry but has not yet happened, or something looks good as in could continue moving is not worth selling. Josh and I typically are not going to say something looks good as in looks good to sell. Like target hit type of stuff. And part of that's because, like we talked about earlier, if you're doing trend following, you're kind of waiting for the market to turn around so that you can sell as it breaks the pattern down. If you're playing like catch the middle portion of the move, that's kind of the way you would play that. If you're trying to catch the absolute top, then it's going to look good and you're going to be selling while it looks good for continuation. If you're selling because it looks like it's topped, then you're not selling the top. You're selling somewhere along the upper side, but, like, you know, you're only capturing the middle of the move. So when we say it looks good, we basically mean it looks good for either continuation or initial move, but hasn't broken up yet.
Yeah, ETH-BTC looking strong after breaking out of that triangle thing.
Yeah.
Again, this looked like it was headed for doom and disaster and devastation, radiation, but yeah, you know,
the degree that these like swept a level and then just went the opposite direction were brutal. However, this did essentially do what we've discussed of what we were seeking, which is just make a higher high on the daily and then buy it, and then that's a breakout, and then hope it stands. So it looked, you know, in the chat, they're talking about the top wick that's on there. I don't know. I think it's fine. It got bought up on the bottom side. Like, that's an uncertainty candle. It's not necessarily a topping candle. It's wicked on both sides.
It's an inverted dragonfly. What are you talking about? I mean, it doesn't look great on the 3-day, but you got to like put some faith in the pattern, if anything.
Yeah, I think on the weekly, it looks like a breakout candle in general. And then I would like the candle more if it closed with a little less wick, a little more body on that weekly ETH-BTC candle. But I wouldn't call this like a bearish candle. I think it looks fine. And also, the other positive element of this is it's not wicking because ETH is up and then fades that on a dollar basis. It's because BTC is playing its own catch-up trade and eating into the ETH-BTC pair a little bit. But they're both like extremely bullish looking on the dollar pairs. So that gives me a little more confidence on this ETH-BTC breakout candle being real, because it's just kind of a rotation back and forth while everybody's happy about the USD gains.
Yeah, and I don't trade this pair directly ever, virtually anyway. So
I like to, and it's not perfect, but it's I certainly keep an eye on it, and I think you do that as well too, but you don't necessarily like take your trade just because of it. Oh, Josh, yeah, feed us the quarterly.
It's worth definitely watching continuously. I just, if I traded it directly, I think I'd go nuts. Yeah, I just have to say this because, you know, it's what I say. Because it's Q3, Q4 has never been bullish, and everybody's high on EIP, whatever. I get it. I'm happy ETH is up. I'm right there with you. But ETH-BTC historically has never been positive. Q4, it's rarely been positive. Q3, keep that in mind. Temper your expectations. Seasonality can be wrong and is wrong all the time. But boy, it'll be interesting if Q4 isn't positive for ETH-BTC.
Yes, I forget who it was in the chat. Somebody was talking, when we were talking about taxes, somebody was talking about it being Almost Autumn. This is also worth referencing for me in the way I plan my taxes. Like last year, I also traded very actively throughout the year, but I felt like Bitcoin was going to really run. So I basically moved most of my stuff to Bitcoin. And when it was looking like it was breaking up from 10K, I just left it there. And I left it there until January. So that's one other way to slightly reduce your tax burden is I didn't trade for the fall very much on that baseline BTC. If I did, it was through derivatives, which doesn't have the same type of tax implications. And that allowed me to limit my tax impacts for the calendar year, basically delay them a year by selling in January rather than in December. So in autumn, if you're looking to, you know, benefit yourself from a tax perspective a little bit, if you're really bullish something for the course of the quarter, you can, you know, basically hold tight a little longer in a position in the fall and then like try to hold off selling that until January or something so that you avoid that tax occurring this year. Like you'd still have to pay it. You just might not have to pay it as quick. So it's a potential strategy there if there's something you're really bullish. And based on the historical precedent, it would tell you BTC would be the place to park.
And I'll say this again. I'll reiterate what we said earlier. This is a buffet. All the analysis you see and hear from any of us is a buffet. If you don't like it, if you don't like the shrimp salad, guess what? You don't have to take any of the shrimp salad off the buffet. If you don't like seasonality, that's fine. You know, I don't like astrology. I ignore that. But I don't go talking crap about it every time. The reason I pay attention to this is because you can't ignore Q4, right? Like if it looked like XRP seasonality where it's literally who knows what all over the place, then I'd say, okay, yeah, ignore it, right? But Ledger's bringing up good points about taxes and risking off DeFi and taking profit and blah, blah, blah. Someone asking in the chat as well, why is it like this? You know, he's giving reasons why potentially tax related.
Oh, I think that like that was the tax implications were pretty much the entire reason I was very, very bullish in January for altcoins is because Bitcoin went crazy. I did not want to sell my Bitcoin because I did not want that 3x of your portfolio to be realized in the same year. So I waited and I bought alts January 1st or 2nd. Crypto Jack's in the chat and I know he and I had a very similar thesis on that. And yeah, so that's why I made that decision. And we could have something similar, but taxes absolutely play a role in people's rotations when they're making these trades because taxes suck and we pay them. Unlike the U.S. government tends to think if they just looked at price action, maybe they would realize that a lot of people do pay taxes.
Yes, I've paid taxes. Yeah, many taxes. So yeah, anytime you see something that's a never or an always, it's probably worth at least slightly paying attention to, you know, something like this where it's like, okay, Q1 virtually always positive, Q4 virtually always negative. So anyway, that's my seasonality spiel.
ETH BTC. On the USD pairs, BTC is quite bullish in Q4 usually, right?
Yes, BTC, it does well in Q2 and Q4. ETH does well in the first half of the year and historically hasn't done so great on the second half of the year.
Interesting. So what we're going to do is we're going to buy Bitcoin at the end of August and we're going to hold Bitcoin, sell it in January, go to ETH, and then retire in Q3 2022, right?
But like sitting here today in this moment, the BTC chart doesn't look better to me than the ETH USD chart does, you know?
No, it's harder to justify in that regard. But it's just stuff to put out there.
Yeah, just things to think about.
All right. So let's summarize a couple things. I want to first say I am not bearish, but we are hitting, we are getting close to my Bitcoin resistance levels where I will be cautious. So bullish, but cautious on those. And then when I look at some other stuff like Curve or, you know, some of these DeFi, what I consider blue chips, I feel like they have a little more wiggle room to the upside. But whether they achieve that all depends on how Bitcoin reacts if it moves into that resistance zone. If it moves up there and then just kind of chills, that could be very bullish for some of these DeFi plays, especially on a relative basis, but of course on a USD basis. So I'm looking for possible continuation for Bitcoin, but I'm not looking for like a 50% move in Bitcoin. Like for Bitcoin to just kind of grind up and you know, have a kind of a 10% move in dollars, and then I can look for reflexivity through positive trades and some of the other things that we've looked at. If we see a positive amendment through this infrastructure bill come through, it's been amazing. This whole infrastructure bill seems to basically be tied up on the crypto language of the pay for clause, which is wild. It's like one of our first big moments, I feel like, for crypto and government. So I'm definitely paying attention to that, and that'll probably impact some of what I do, but we'll go from there. That's my summary. What is yours, Josh?
Put me on the spot.
You don't have to have anything if you don't.
My summary is everything looks virtually identical and should trade extremely similar and rotate. You know, I think a smart thing to do here to actually be rotating out of ETH and into DeFi, into stuff that hasn't moved up yet to its target, because ETH, I'm not bearish on ETH, I'm not bearish on BTC, but
yeah, but
I mean, this stuff has moved. Look at this move.
Yeah.
67%. Like, word. At some point, people are going to start taking profit on this. Okay. That's all I'm saying. Whether it's you, me, your neighbor, somebody's going to start taking profit. And I think it's worth rotating into other stuff. That's all.
Yep. And also, as people make money on one thing, they move towards ways to make money on other things. So.
And I 100% think it's worth rotating out of NFTs, but I've never in them. So, you know, ignore everything I have to say about the matter.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. I still have some NFTs, but I'm in on house money right now. So it's no big deal. Thanks for being here, y'all. Appreciate you. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can like and subscribe, do all that stuff, whatever. Thank you to Matcha for being our partners. Go to lightersize.com/matcha to make a trade there today. I gotta go. We'll see you later. Monuments crumble.